13. In the darkness of gathering fright, Freya Holm wandered, trying to escape insight, the awareness of absolute non-being which the intricate weapon manned by the two veteran police of Lies Incorporated had thrust onto her. How long ago? She could not tell. Her time sense, in the face of the field emanating from the weapon, had, like so much else that constituted objective reality, totally vanished. At her waist, a delicate detection meter clicked on, registered a measured passage of high-frequency current. She halted, and the gravity of this new configuration slapped her into abrupt alertness. The meter had been built to record one sole subvariety of electrical activity, the flux emanating from a functioning telpor station. She peered, and gathering in the dense haze that occluded her sight, she made out what normally would have passed for, and beyond any doubt had been designed deliberately to pass for, a mediocre construct, a peripatetic bathroom. It appeared to have landed nearby, undoubtedly to give aid and comfort to some passerby. Its gay, bright neon sign winked on and off invitingly, displaying the relief-providing slogan, Uncle John's Little Hutsut. An ordinary sight. And yet, according to the meter at her belt, not a peripatetic bathroom at all, but one end of a von Einem entity, set down here at new colonized land and working away full blast. The recorded line surge appeared to be maximum, not minimum. The station could not be more fully in operation. Warily, she made her way toward it. Heavy gray haze, a diffuse mass of drifting airborne debris, surrounded her as she entered Uncle John's Little Hutsut station, passed down the quaintly archaic wrought iron staircase, and into the cool, dimly lit chamber marked Ladies.
5 cents, please, a mechanical voice said pleasantly.
In a reflexive gesture, she handed the non-existent attendant a dime. Her change rolled down a slot to her, and she pocketed it with absolutely no interest. Because ahead of her, two bald women sat in adjoining stalls, conversing in deep, guttural German. She drew her sidearm and said to them as she pointed the pistol at them,
"Hände hoch bitte."
Instantly, one of the two figures yanked at the handle nearest her, or more accurately, his right hand. A roar of rushing water thundered up and lashed at Freya in a sonic torrent, which shook her and caused her vision to blur, to become disfigured. The two shapes wavered and blended, and she found it virtually impossible to keep her weapon pointed at them.
Fräulein, a masculine voice said tautly, gib uns augenblicklich dein.
She fired. One of the twin indistinct shapes atomized silently, but the alternate telpor technician hopped, floundered to one side. He sprang to his feet and bolted off. She followed him with the barrel of her gun, fired once more, and missed. The last shot I'm entitled to, she thought to herself wanly. I missed my chance. I missed getting both of them, and now it's me. A current of hot, lashing air burst at her from the automatic wet hands dryer. She ducked, half blinded, attempted to fire her small weapon once more, and then, from behind her, something of steel, something not alive but alert and active, closed around her middle. She gasped in fear as it swept her from her feet. Twisting, she managed a meager glimpse of it. Grotesquely, it was the vanity table assembly. Or rather, a homotropic device cammed as a vanity table. Its legs, 6 of them, had fitted one into the next, like old-fashioned curtain rods. The joint appendage had extended itself expertly, groped until it encountered her, and then, without the need or assistance of life, had embraced her in a grip of crushing death. The remaining telpor technician ceased to duck and weave. He drew himself upright, irritably tossed aside the female garments which he had worn, walked a few steps toward her to watch her destruction. Face twitching eagerly, he surveyed the rapid closure of the vanity table defense system, owing with satisfaction, his thin, pinched face marred with sadistic delight, pleasure at a well-functioning instrument of murder.
Please,
she gasped, as the appendage drew her back toward the crypto vanity table, which now displayed a wide maw in which to engulf her. Within it, she would be converted to ergs, energy to power the assembly for future use.
Es tut mir furchtbar leid, the teleport technician said, licking his mildly hairy lips with near erotic delight. Aber,
can't you do anything for me?
She managed to say, or rather made an attempt to say. No breath remained in her now by which to speak.
The end, she realized, was close by. It would not be long.
Schön Tag,
the German intoned, his eyes fixed on her. Crooning to himself, he approached closer and closer, swaying in a hypnotic dance of physiological sympathy, physical but not emotional correspondence, his body but not his mentality, responding to what was rapidly happening to her as the tapered extension of the vanity table drew her back to engulf her. No one, she realized. Nothing. Rockmel, she thought. Why is it that... And then her thoughts dimmed. Over. Done. She shut her eyes and with her fingers groped for the destruct trigger, which would set off a high-yield charge implanted subdermally. Better to die by means of a merciful lies incorporated Selbstmord instrument placed within her body for her protection than by the cruel THL thing devouring her piecemeal. As the final remnant of awareness departed from her, she touched the trigger.
Oh no, miss,
a reprimanding voice said from a distance away.
Not in the presence of a guided tour.
Sounds, the near presence of people. She opened her eyes, saw descending the stairs of the women's room a gang of miscellaneous persons, men and women and children, all dressed well, all solemnly scrutinizing her and the remaining Telpor technician, the vanity table with its metal arm engaged in dragging her to her death. My God, she realized, I've seen this on TV, on transmissions from Whale's Mouth. It can't be, Freya Holm said to herself. This is part of the ersatz reality superimposed for our benefit. Years of this hoax. Still? This is impossible. Yet, here it was, before her eyes, not on TV, but in actuality.
The tour guide, with armband and carefully pressed suit, continued to eye her reprovingly. Being killed before the eyes of a guided tour,
it's wrong, she realized. True, she agreed. You're absolutely correct. Thinking that, she found herself sobbing hysterically. Unable to cease, she shut her eyes, took a deep, unsteady breath.
I am required to inform you, miss, the guide stated, his voice now wooden and correct, that you are under arrest for causing a disturbance interfering with the orderly unfolding of an official licensed White House tour. I am also required to inform you that you are in custody as of this moment, without written notice. And you are to be held without bail until a colony municipal court can, at a later date, deal with you.
He eyed the teleport technician coldly and with massive suspicion.
Sir, you appear to be involved in this matter to some extent.
In no way whatsoever, the teleport technician said at once.
Then, the guide said, as his herded group of sightseers gawked, how do you explain your unauthorized presence here in the ladies' section of this Uncle John's little Hutsut station?
The teleport technician shrugged, flushing crimson.
A thingism, the guide said in an aside to Freya. He flushes at his presence in a comfort station.
He sniggered, and the group of sightseers laughed to various degrees.
I hold this job, the guide informed Freya as he expertly unfastened her from the manual extension of the pseudo-vanity table. For good reason. My wit delights the multitude,
the teleport technician said sullenly. Thingism tree is degenerate.
Perhaps, the guide admitted.
He steadied Freya as the vanity table reluctantly released her. In a gentlemanly way, he assisted her away from the feral device and over to his throng.
But it helps pass the dull hours away, does it not?
He addressed his tame collection of sightseers. They nodded obediently, the men eyeing Freya with interest. She saw now that her blouse had been neatly shredded by the arm of the vanity table, and with numb fingers, she gathered it about her.
No need of that, the guide said softly in her ear. A bit of exposed female bosom also helps pass the dull hours.
He grinned at her. He added half to himself. I wouldn't be surprised if President Jones wanted to interview you personally. He takes a grave interest in matters of this sort. These civil disturbances which upset the orderly.
Please just get me out of here, Freya said tightly.
Of course. The guide led her to the stairs. Behind them, the teleport technician was ignored.
But I don't think you can avoid spending a few moments with the august president of Whale's Mouth in view of, or perhaps I should say because of, the anatomy which you reveal. So, President Omar Jones, Freya said, does not exist. Oh? The guide glanced at her mockingly. Are you certain, miss? Are you truly ready to invite a little of Dr. Lupov's SAT to remedy a rather disordered little feminine mental imbalance? She groaned, and allowed the guide to escort her and the group of sightseers up the stairs, out of Uncle John's little hutsut comfort station, and onto the surface of new colonized land. I'd like to have your complete legal name, miss, the guide was murmuring to her. He now held a book of forms in his left hand and a pen in his right. Last name first, please. And if you have any ID on you, I'd be much obliged to see that, too. Oh, Miss Freya Holm. He glanced at her wallet, then at her face, with a totally new expression. I wonder what that means, Freya wondered. She had an intuition that she would soon know, and it would not be pleasant. At the top of the stairs, two agents of Trails of Hoffman Limited met her and the guide, expertly relieved the guide of his self-assumed responsibilities. We'll take her from here on in, the taller of the two THL agents explained curtly to the guide. He took Freya by the shoulder and led her, with his companion, toward a parked official-looking oversized flapple. The guide, perplexed, looked after them, murmured, Gracious, and then returned to his customary duties. He herded his group off in the other direction, circumspectly minding his own business. The expression on his face showed all too well that he recognized that somehow he had strayed out of his depth. His discomfort at unexpectedly encountering the two THL agents seemed to Freya almost as great as her own, and her awareness of the lethal aspect of THL grew with this recognition, in fact, burgeoned into overwhelming immensity. Even here on Fomalhaut 9, the power, the dull metallic size of THL was matched by nothing else. The great entity stood alone, without a real antagonist. And here the UN failed to manifest its own authority. Or so, she reflected somberly, it would seem. The contest between Horst Berthold and Theo Ferry seemed to have resolved itself before genuinely getting underway. Fundamentally, it was no contest at all, and Theo Ferry, more than anyone else, knew it, beyond any doubt. Your operations here, she told the two THL agents, are absolutely illegal. And having announced this, she felt the utter futility of mere words. How could an empty statement abolish THL, or for that matter, even these two minor instruments of its authority? The futility of the struggle seemed to her, at this instant, beyond compare. She felt her verve, her energy quotient, with her. Meanwhile, the two THL agents led her rapidly toward their parked, motor-on flapple. When the flapple had achieved reasonable altitude, one of the THL agents produced a large, hardbound volume, examined it, then passed it to his companion, who, after an interval, then abruptly handed it to Freya. What's this? She demanded. And where are we going? You may be interested in this, the taller agent informed her. I think you'll find it well worth your time. Go ahead, open it. With almost occult suspicion, Freya studied the cover. An economic history of new colonized land, she said with distaste. More of the propaganda, lurid and false, of the Ereal President's regnancy, she realized, and started to hand it back. The agent, however, refused to accept the book. He shook his head curtly. And so, with reluctance, she opened to the back, glanced with distaste over the index, and saw her own name. That's right, the tall THL agent said with a smirk. You're in it, Miss Holm. So's that fathead Ben Applebaum. She turned pages and saw that it was so. Will this tell me, she wondered, what's happened to Rockmill? Finding the page reference, she at once turned to it. Her hands shook as she read the startling passage. What way? Rockmill demanded, lifting his eyes from the page and confronting the creature before him. You mean become like you? His body cringed. He retreated physically from even the notion of it, let alone its presence here before him. Good Lord, Freya said, and read intently on. All flesh must die, the Eye-Eater said, and giggled. Aloud, Freya said, The Eye-Eater. Chilled, she said to the two THL agents, What's that? In the name of God. Is that in there? The shorter of the two agents asked his companion. He appeared displeased. Reaching out, he suddenly retrieved the book. At once, he put it away out of sight. It was a mistake to let her see it, he told his companion. She knows too much now.
She doesn't know a damn thing, his companion said.
Freya said, tell me, what is the Eye Eater? I have to know. Her breath caught in her throat. Raggedly, she managed to breathe, but with difficulty.
A fungiform,
the taller of the THL agents said briefly.
One that resides here.
He said nothing further. Is Rockmel alive? She demanded. At least she knew one thing. Rockmel was here at Whale's Mouth, and that she had not, up until this instant, realized. The shorter agent was correct. She had learned too much. At least too much for their purpose, but for hers, hardly enough.
Yeah, the taller agent conceded. He came looking for you.
And found it, the other said. For a time there was silence. The flapple droned on, heaven only knew where. If you don't tell me where you're taking me, Freya said levelly, I'm going to destruct myself. Her fingers already touched the trigger at her waist. She waited, eyes fixed on the two men with her in the oversized flapple. Several moments passed. The UN, she said, equipped me with this.
Get her!
The taller THL agent rasped. Instantly, he and his companion leaped toward her, clawing.
Let me go!
She choked. Her fingers, torn from the trigger, dug into their clutching hands.
I couldn't do it,
she realized.
I couldn't activate the darn mechanism.
Weariness filled her as she felt their hands rip loose the destruct mechanism, tear it apart, then drop it into the waste slot of the flapple.
It would have destroyed all of us,
the taller agent gasped as he and his companion confronted her accusingly, with indignation mixed with apprehension. She had genuinely frightened them by her near suicide. As far as they knew, it had been close, very close, but actually, she could not have done it at all. The man's companion muttered, We better consult the book, see what it says, assuming, of course, it says anything. Together, the two of them pored over the book, ignoring her. Freya, with trembling fingers, lit a cigarette, stared sightlessly through the window at the ground below. Trees, houses, exactly as the TV screen had promised. Jolted, she thought, where's the garrison state? Where's the war I saw? The battle I was a part of only a little while ago? It made no sense. We were fighting, she said at last. Startled, the THL agents glanced at her, then at one another.
She must have gotten into one of the paraworlds,
one said presently to his companion. They both nodded in attentive agreement.
Silver? White? I forget which Lupov calls it. Not the clock, though.
And not blue, the other agent murmured. Again, the two of them returned to the large hardbound book. Again, they ignored her. Strange, Freya thought. It made no sense, and yet the two THL agents appeared to understand. Will I ever know? She asked herself. And if so, will it be in time? Several worlds, she realized, and each of them different. And, if they're looking in that book, not to see what has happened, but to see what will happen, then it must have something to do with time. Time travel. The UN's time warpage weapon. Evidently, Sepp von Einem had gotten hold of it. The senile old genius and his disturbed, proleptic protege, Glock, had altered it. God only knew how. But effectively, that much was obvious. The flapple began to descend. Glancing, she saw below them a large ship moored by its tail, in flight position, poised to ascend at any moment. In fact, wisps of fuel vapor trickled from its rear. A big one, she decided. It belonged to someone of importance. Possibly President Omar Jones, or worse. She had a good idea that it was not Omar Jones' ship, even if such a person existed. Undoubtedly, the ship belonged to Theo Ferry, and as she watched the ship grow, a bizarre idea occurred to her. What if the Omphalos had been beaten years ago in its flight from the Sol system to Fomalhaut? This ship, huge and menacing with its pitted gray hull, certainly it did have the sullied, darkened appearance of a much-utilized vessel. Had it, at some earlier time, crossed deep space between the two star systems? The ultimate irony. Theo Ferry had made the journey before Rockmel Ben Applebaum. Or, rather possibly had. She could, of course, not be sure. But she felt intuitively that Ferry had, all this time, been capable of doing it. So whatever could be learned had long ago, perhaps decades ago, been learned. and by the very man whom they had at all costs to defeat.
Better brush your hair,
the taller of the two THL agents announced to her. Then he winked, lewdly it seemed to her, to his companion.
I'm giving you fair warning. You're going to have an important visitor here in your room in a few minutes.
Almost unable to speak, Freya said, This isn't my room.
Bedroom?
Both THL agents laughed in unison, and this time there was no mistaking it. The tone was one of rancid, enormous licentiousness. And, clearly, this appeared to the two men an old story. They both knew precisely what would be happening. Not to them, but for them to witness. She was overtly conscious of the mood already in progress. They knew what would soon be expected of them, and of her. And yet it did not seem to her so much concerned with Theo Ferry as it did with the environment here as a whole. She sensed an underlying wrongness, and sensed further that in some way which she did not comprehend, Ferry was as much a victim of it as she. Paraworlds, she thought to herself. They, the two THL agents, had said that silver, white, the clock, and finally blue. Am I in a paraworld now? She wondered. Whatever they are. Perhaps that would explain the twisted, strained wrongness which the world around her now seemed to possess throughout. She shivered. Which one is this? She asked herself, assuming it's any of them. But even if it is, she realized, that still doesn't tell me what they are, or how I got into this one, or how I managed to scramble back. Again she shivered.
We'll be touching ships with Mr. Ferry at 003.5.
The taller of the two THL agents informed her conventionally. He seemed amused now, as if her discomfort were quaint and charming.
So be prepared, he added. Last chance to.
May I see that book again? She blurted. The one you have there? The book about me and Rockmel?
The taller of the two agents passed her the volume. At once she turned to the index and sought out her own name. Two citations in the first part of the book, three later on. She selected the next to last one on page 298. A moment later, she had begun rapidly to read. No doubt could exist in her mind now. It had been abundantly demonstrated. With renewed courage, Freya faced Theodoric Ferry, the most powerful man in either the Sol or the Fomalhaut system, and perhaps even beyond, and said, I'm sorry, Mr. Ferry. Her voice, in her own ears, was cool, as calm as she might have hoped for. I failed to realize what you are. You'll have to excuse my hysteria on that basis. With a slight but unnoticed tremor, she adjusted the right strap of her half-bra, drawing it back up onto her smooth, bare, slightly tanned shoulder. I now... Yes, Miss Holm? Ferry's tone was dark, mocking. Exactly what do you realize about me now? Say it. He chuckled. Freya said, You're an aquatic cephalopod, a Mazdust. And you've always been. A long time ago, when Telpor first linked the Sol system with the Fomalhaut system, when the first Terran field team crossed over and returned. That's correct, Theodoric Ferry agreed, and once more chuckled, although now his, or rather its, tone consisted of a wet, wailing hiss. I infiltrated your race decades ago. I've been in your midst. Better get the book back from her again, the smaller of the two THL agents said warningly to his companion. I still think she's reading too damn much. He then, without further consultation, snatched the book back from her numbed hands, this time put it away in a locked briefcase, which, after an indecisive pause, he then laboriously chained to his wrist, just in case.
Yeah,
the other agent agreed absently. He had become completely involved in landing the flapple on the flattened roof indentation of Theo Ferry's huge ship.
She probably read too much, but...
He spun the unusually elaborate controls.
It doesn't much matter at this point. I fail to see what effective difference it makes.
From beneath them, a low scraping noise sounded. The flapple jiggled. They had landed. Doesn't it matter? She thought, dazed. That Theo Ferry is another life form entirely, not human at all, that has invaded our system a long time back? Don't you two men care? Did you know it all this time? Our enemy, she realized, is far more ominous than any of us had at any time glimpsed. Ironic, she thought. One of the sales pitches they gave us, THL gave us, was the need to fight with and subdue the hostile native life forms of the Fomalhaut system, and it turns out to be true after all, true in the most awful sense. I wonder, she thought, how many of THL's employees know it? I wonder. She thought, I wonder how many more of these monsters exist on Terra, imitating human life forms. Is Theodoric Ferry the only one? Probably not. Probably most of THL is staffed by them, including Sepp von Einem. The ability to mingle with human beings, to appear like them, undoubtedly it's due to a device compounded either by von Einem or that hideous thing who works with him, that Greg Glock. Of all of them, she thought, none is really less human than Glock. The door of the flapple swung open. The two THL agents at once stood at attention. Reluctantly, she turned her unwilling eyes toward the now fully open door. In the entranceway stood Theodoric Ferry. She screamed. I beg your pardon, Ferry said and lifted an eyebrow archly. He turned questioningly to the two THL agents. What's the matter with Miss Holm? She seems out of control.
Sorry, Mr. Ferry, the taller of the two agents said briskly. I would guess that she's not well. She appears to have hallucinated one or more of what is called paraworlds. On her arrival here, she experienced the particular delusional world dealing with the garrison state. Although now, from what she's told us, that delusion seems to have evaporated.
But something, Ferry said with a frown, has replaced it. Perhaps an alternate paraworld? Possibly even a more severe one. Well, Miss Holm has turned out as predicted. He chuckled, walked several cautious steps toward Freya, who stood frozen and trembling, unable even to retreat. As with her paramour, Ruckmel von Applebaum.
Ben, the taller of the two THL agents corrected tactfully.
Ah, yes, Ferry nodded amiably. I am more accustomed to the prefix designating a high-born German than the rather, he grimaced offensively, low-class name structure employed by, individuals of Mr. Applebaum's, shall I say, type. He grimaced distastefully, then once more moved toward Freya Holm. They didn't search me, she said to herself.
A spasm of fierceness filled her as she realized that, realized, too, its meaning.
Within the tired tails of superior fabric caught in a bun at her midsection lay a tiny but effective self-defense instrument, provided by the WebEx people at Lies Incorporated. Now, if ever, the time had come to employ it. True, it had a limited range. Only one person could be taken out by it, and if she moved to take out Theo Ferry, both of the THL agents, armed and furious, would remain. She could readily picture the following moments once she had managed to wound or destroy Ferry. But it appeared well worth it, even if she had not learned of Ferry's actual physiological origin. Her fingers touched the bun of cloth at her midriff. An instant later, she had found the safety of the weapon, had switched it to off.
Drat, Ferry said, regarding her uneasily.
Drat, sir,
the taller of the two agents corrected him, as if routinely accustomed to doing so.
Drat is the Terran ejaculative term of dismay, if I may call your attention at a time like this to something so trivial. Still, we all know how important it is, how vital you rightly feel it to be, to maintain strict verisimilitude and accuracy in your speech patterns.
Thank you, Frank, Theo Ferry agreed. He did not take his eyes from Freya. Was this woman searched?
Well, sir, the THL agent named Frank said uncomfortably, we had in mind your overweening desire to obtain a female of this
blurb. Theodoric Ferry quivered in agitation. She has on some variety of...
Sorry, sir. The agent named Frank broke in with utter tact. The term of immediate and dismayed concern which you're reaching for is the word blast. The term you've employed, blurb, deals with a sensational ad for some form of entertainment, generally a notice on a book cover or a flap as to...
All at once, Freya became aware, shockingly, of the meaning of the THL agent's remarks. Everything which she suspected, everything which she had read in Dr. Blood's book, now had been validated. Theodoric Ferry had to be reminded, constantly, of the most commonplace Terran linguistic patterns. Of course, these patterns were to him a totally alien structure. So it was true. And, because of what had up to this instant seemed an absurd, pointless exchange of remarks, no doubt could exist in her mind now. It had been abundantly demonstrated. With renewed courage, Freya faced Theodoric Ferry, the most powerful man in either the Sol or the Fomalhaut system, and perhaps even beyond, and said, "I'm sorry, Mr. Ferry." Her voice in her own ears was cool, as calm as she might have hoped for. "I failed to realize what you are. You'll have to excuse my hysteria on that basis." With a slight but unnoticed tremor, she adjusted the right strap of her half-bra, drawing it back up onto her smooth, bare, slightly tanned shoulder. "I now?" "Yes, Miss Holm." Fairy's tone was dark, mocking. "Exactly what do you realize about me now? Say it." He chuckled. Freya said, "You're an aquatic cephalopod, a Mazdust, and you've always been. A long time ago, when Telpor first linked the Sol system with the Fomalhaut system, when the first Terran field team crossed over and returned." "That's correct," Theodoric Ferry agreed and once more chuckled, although now his, or rather its, tone consisted of a wet, wailing hiss. "I infiltrated your race decades ago. I've been in your midst before Lies Incorporated was founded. I've been with your people before you, Miss Holm, were even born." Studying her intently, he smiled. His eyes shone bleakly, and then, to her horror, the eyes began to migrate. Faster and faster they moved toward the center of the forehead. There they joined, fused, became one vast compound eye whose many lenses reflected her own image back at her, as in 1,000 warped black mirrors, again and again. Within the bun of cloth, slightly beneath her ribcase, Freya Holm compressed the activating assembly of the defense gun.
"Schlunk!"
Theodoric Ferry wheezed. His single eye rattled and spun as his body rocked back and forth. Then, without warning, the great dark orb popped from his bulging forehead and hung dangling from a spring of steel. At the same time, his entire head burst. Screaming, Freya ducked as bits of gears, rods, wiring, components of power systems, cogs, amplifying surge gates, all failing to remain within the shattered structure, bounced here and there in the flapple. The two THL agents ducked, grunted, and then retreated as the rain of hot, destroyed metal pieces condensed about them both. She too reflexively drew back. Staring, she saw a main shaft and an intricate cog mechanism, like a clock, she thought dazedly. "He's not a deformed, non-Terran water creature. He's a mechanical assembly. I don't understand." She shut her eyes, moaned in despair. The flapple now had faded momentarily into obscurity. So intense was the hailstorm of metal and plastic parts from the bursting entity which had posed as Theodoric Ferry just a moment before. Had posed, more accurately, as an aquatic horror masquerading as Theodoric Ferry.
"One of those damn simulacrums," the THL agent, who was not Frank, said in disgust.
"Simulacra,"
Frank corrected, his teeth grinding in outrage as a major transformer from the power supply struck him in the temple and sent him flailing backward, off balance. He fell against the wall of the flapple, groaned, and then slid to a sitting position, where he remained, his eyes empty. The other THL agent, arms windmilling, fought his way through the still exploding debris of the simulacrum toward Freya. His fingers groped for her ineffectually, and then he gave up. Abandon whatever he had had in his mind. Turning, he hunched forward, lurched blindly off in the general direction of the entrance hatch of the flapple, and then with a clatter disappeared. She remained with the disintegrating simulacrum and the unconscious THL agent Frank. The only sound was the metallic thump of components as they continued to pelt against the walls and floor of the flapple.
"Good Lord,"
she thought indistinctly, her mind in a state of almost deranged confusion.
"That book they showed me, it was wrong, or else I failed to read far enough."
Desperately, she searched about in the rubbish-heaped flapple for the book. Then all at once she remembered what had happened to it. The smaller THL agent had escaped with it locked in a briefcase chained to his wrist. The book had, so to speak, departed with him. In any case, both the agent and the volume were gone now, so she would never know what had come next in the printed text. Had it corrected its own evident misperception, as she had hers? Or did the text of Dr. Blood's book continue on, manfully declaring that Theodoric Ferry was an aquatic, what was the term it and she had used? Mazdost, that was it. She wondered now precisely what it meant. Until she had read the word in the text, she had never before encountered it. But there was something else, something at the rim of consciousness, crowding forward, attempting to enter her mind. It could not be thrust back, odious as it was. The clock, that term referring to one of the so-called paraworlds. Had this been the clock? And if so, then the original encounter between the black space pilot, Rockmel Ben Applebaum, and the sim of Theodoric Ferry, that, back in the Sol system, had been a manifestation, not a fairy simulacrum at all, but, like this, of the paraworld called the clock. The delusional world somehow active here at Whale's Mouth had already spread to and penetrated Terra. It had already been experienced. Experienced, yes, but not recognized. She shuddered.